is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We're going to be talking some football coming up. We're going to be talking about the Mariners. We got it all covered, and we'll be doing it with a fill-in. Dave Wyman on vacation for a few days this week, so sitting in his spot, the one, the only, Dave Grosby. Groz, how are you?
Bob, it's a pleasure to be a fill-in.
How's everything?
It's good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm great. It's a beautiful day outside. The weather's been awesome, and the Mariners have been remarkably fun to watch, and they're in first place. How does it get any better than that?
It does not, brother. It does not. It's been a fun start to the season. A lot of fun to watch these guys go at it with the youth and enthusiasm that makes you think that they could be in for the long haul. We'll have to wait and see, of course.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think all Mariner fans, as you know as well as anybody, are very, very reticent to jump in and say, man, I love it. This is great. They're very, you know, wait for a couple weeks, wait for a month. Let's talk then. You know, there's that attitude attached to it. But we had a conversation last week on just enjoy the moment. When they're good, have fun when they're good. And then when they're bad, we can talk about that. But right now, I think this team is a surprise to a lot of people in the way that they're winning. They're doing it without, you know, some stellar starting pitching. Their bullpen has been on fire, especially since James Paxton's been gone. I mean, they're finding ways. Even guys who aren't hitting for the season are coming up with timely moments, timely hits, timely walks. It's been really interesting to see how this team's been able to pull games out of the fire. And here they are in first place, and they've got a -3 run differential at this point.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that point to the fact that this may be more illusion than anything else, although I completely agree with you. It's to be enjoyed while it's going on. But, you know, I mean, I doubt their bullpen is as good as it seemed. You know what, they've hit 14 home runs in the last 9 or 10 games, so I doubt they're going to hit 200 home runs this year. They can't keep losing starting pitching and have things work out better, but look, it's a fun start. It's been a crazy start to the baseball season in a lot of places. The Royals are another one that's come storming out of the gate and are playing very well as well. So, you know, time, as you said before, you know, things will figure themselves out as they go along. But right now, it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and the beauty of it for me, Groz, is that I didn't come into this season with any expectations when it comes to their record. I said they'd win 73 games. Maybe they'll end up being better. That's one where you hope to be wrong. But you looked at it and said, this is a building year. There's so much inexperience, so much youth, and we're going to be talking about players that aren't even with the club at this particular moment by the end of the season, whether it's Kelnick, whether it's any of the pitchers we've talked about. So, you know, there's just so much promise and potential attached to guys that aren't even with the team at this moment. And to me, that's what the season was about, is watching that development, seeing Kyle Lewis take the next step, seeing if Evan White can find his bat at the plate.
Certainly, the fact that the wins and losses might be the same as they've been the past couple of years, but you're doing it with the guys who you expect to be around for the long haul. Maybe Kyle Seager's an exception to that, and I hope Mitch Haniger is not an exception to that because he's just playing great. But, you know, you're seeing the young guys do it. This is not a team of, like the 13-2 start was kind of fueled by Edwin Encarnacion and Jay Bruce and, you know, guys who you didn't expect to be around who were veterans, who were, you know, just here for a cup of coffee and then on their way out. The guys that you're seeing playing now, and you mentioned the guys that are going to be coming up later on this year, are the guys you expect to be in it, you know, to be the guys that get you there in the long haul. You know, watching Ty France, I mean, he's a guy that they have big plans for. You talked about, you know, Evan White, if he can start hitting as well as he fields. I mean, they've really got something there. But, you know, you're seeing them play with the guys they expect to be good with, and that's what makes it a little more interesting too.
Yeah, I know it's 16 games into their season, but man, I have really enjoyed watching this team play. I look forward to going home and watching them each night. It's really been fun for me as a long-suffering Mariner fan to feel like it's not duct tape guys, and you just ran down a couple of them, and it's not a shot at those guys, but you know when they bring them in, you're not building around them. They're occupying a spot. They're temporary. They're for now guys. Now you're talking about, as you just said, guys you intend on them being there. It looks like they'll be there, whether it's Ty France, whether it's Evan White, whether it's, you know, Taylor Trammell, J.P. Crawford. I mean, just so much. And I'm with you. We've been talking about Mitch Haniger going, you know, we forgot about this guy for almost 2 years because all of their potential, all of their high-end prospects are outfielders, you know, with pitchers in there as well. But talking about position players, they're almost all outfielders, whether you're talking about Rodriguez, talking about Kelnick, talking about Trammell, talking about Kyle Lewis, and you just didn't even talk about Machaniger because he wasn't around. It was sort of out of sight, out of mind. And then once he started getting healthy, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, now how does he fit in? Well, hopefully he gets hot and they trade him. And now you watch him, and he's a house of fire. And I'm going, I don't want him to go. I don't want this guy to go. He's a proven commodity. These other guys you look at go, yeah, they're all loaded with potential, but you don't know if they're going to turn into something big, or maybe they'll be just guys, or maybe they'll wash out. We have no idea. But with Haniger, we've seen him do it at this level. He's doing it at this level. His biggest problem is injuries and availability.
Which is why he'll never have the kind of value in a trade that you'd really want to get back for him. He's one of those guys who's, because of the fact that they put so much time and effort into keeping him here, and as you mentioned, the injuries that he's had, he's always going to be worth more to the Mariners than he's going to be worth in a trade. Now, the other teams will recognize him and see that he looks good, but again, they will bring up just what you said, the fact that, well, you know, he's proven it for a year, or for a half a year if you're talking about trading him this year. But, you know, how can we be certain that he's got any sort of longevity? So I think the Mariners got a little bit of control over him for the next year or so, and they may well want to build around him. I mean, he looks like a real all-star player this past week, and he's been that before, so it's not him being anything that he hasn't done beforehand, but he's shown it all in the last couple of the last week, a week and a half or so that I've been watching it closely. He looks every inch an all-star ball player and the kind of guy that you can build things around. So yeah, I can see, you know, it's funny, time changes everything, and Kyle Seager's contract is no longer nearly as onerous as it used to be, and they may have some value for him on the trade market, but otherwise I think that they've moved most of the guys that they're going to move. I mean, you know, I Haniger would be the only other one, and it would take, from my position, I mean, you'd want an awful lot to get rid of him the way he's playing for you right now, and I just don't know that other teams would necessarily give you that. So fine, let's keep him here. Let's keep him playing the way he's playing.
Keep him here, and he still remains. I said it before, you know, a couple years ago, but even now, you look at the roster, he is as close as you have to a five-tool player. He still is. If you look at everybody else, they all have their strengths and weaknesses, but he's a guy, when healthy, does it all. He can run, he can hit, he can throw, he can hit for power, he can hit for average. He's your five-tool player as it sits right now. We'll see. Maybe Kelnick will end up being one of those guys, but he's still that guy. And how fun, Graz, was it to see? I'm proud of the Mariner fans. You get 9,000. You're not allowed to pack the stadium, obviously, but I thought they did a great job harassing and heckling these cheating donkey Houston Astros, and they win the series. And I don't care that they're missing players because – you know this as well. The Astros were like the Rams to the Seahawks. It didn't matter how bad or good they were. They were always a problem for the Mariners. So the idea that, oh, well, they didn't have Altuve and they didn't have this guy and that, normally they would still find a way to win. It's just who they've been. They just had the Mariners' number, and it was so cool to see, A, the Mariners take 2 of 3, and B, see the Mariner fans just let them have it throughout the weekend. I loved it.
Yeah, that's the only reason why you really missed Altuve, because he's should be one of the focal points of that.
And Bregman, and I agree, as well, that little creep.
Yeah, especially since, you know, I mean, unlike, say, the Yankees or the Dodgers or maybe even the A's, you know, they don't have – the Mariners weren't a playoff team at that time, so they don't have that against the Astros. But, yes, I definitely thought – Mariner fans stood up and did what they needed to do, and that it's funny that's not let up, and I don't think it's going to let up on the Astros all year.
Nor should it. They didn't have to face any of it last year, so they deserve what they get, and they deserve it next year when stadiums are hopefully full. So I don't think it goes away anytime soon, as I was trying to tell some dopey Astros fan on Twitter who wanted to argue with me about, it's been 4 years, let it go. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. That's not how this works. What do you mean, let it go? They've paid the price. They've paid no price. None. Not a single player was fined. Not a single player was suspended. They've paid no price. So stop with that. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. We were just talking about Haniger, and I love hearing it. I love hearing the calls on this. How about his two-run triple in this one?
Here's the pitch on the way to Haniger, swinging a fly ball into center field. Backing up, Straw to the warning track, still going back, reaches out, and it's off his glove! Ronnie third, heading home. Down the stretch he comes, Trammell. Right behind him, Ronnie third, heading home, J.P. Crawford. The throw-in is cut off. Haniger around to third base with a two-run triple. Straight away center field, that ball kept going and going and going, and the Mariners have the lead, 3-2 over the Astros here in the bottom of the fifth.
Listen to that crowd. That doesn't sound like 9,000. Sounds like 39,000.
And he made he made that guy Straw look like a drunken sailor out there. Because normally, when you have a ball hit like that, and a good center fielder, you know, just turns around and goes to a spot. But as Rizzi called it perfectly, the ball just kept going and going and going. Hard to read off the bat, and it was a nice triple for Haniger, and that was that late inning thunder. I mean, he did it again in the seventh inning as well, as I'm sure we're going to hear. He was flying. He looked awfully good in that play.
It was so cool. Yeah, double in the game. He's been rock solid. And then Ty France, the guy that came over in that San Diego trade that we didn't really discuss much, but you know, you look at his numbers. He split the season with the Mariners and the Padres last year. Had the same exact batting average in both spots. Almost split the season in half. Almost the identical number of games, and hit .306 for both teams. And then he comes into spring training and he hits. It's just what he does, and he did it yesterday.
The 0-1 pitch to France. Swing and a fly ball deep to left field. McCormick going back to the warning track, to the wall, running out of room. Goodbye, baseball! Into the Astros bullpen. Ty France with his third home run of the season. The Mariners have now scored four here in the bottom of the fifth and now lead the Astros 5-2.
I actually cheated him. He hit .309. So he hit .309 with San Diego in 20 games and then played 22 games with the Mariners and hit .309. So he's just, it's what the guy does. It's fun to watch him at the plate. I don't know if he's going to be a fielder for this team. I know some have had designs on him potentially being your third baseman, you know, if they let Kyle Seager go without picking up that option. But as a hitter, he is really consistent and really fun to watch.
Yeah, on that home run, I watched it a couple of times. I mean, he's got a tremendous compact swing. I was trying to think of who it reminded me of because it's a familiar-looking swing, but on that home run in particular, just no wasted motion. And you're right, he's got the feeling of a professional hitter to him, and there's always room for those. There's always room for those. The Mariners had one of those for years, Edgar something or other, who hit the ball very well for a long, long time and really had you not worrying about that spot in the lineup at all. So if he's your future DH, that's fine too.
Yeah, and it feels like we got to look at Ty France at second base. And I mean, he made some plays, but there are some where you went, okay, I'm not sure that he's – we asked Ryan Divish about this, and he had a great line saying, you know, I asked him, is he a guy you think can play third? You think he's a decent enough fielder? And he said – you know, as a third baseman, he's a great DH. So it was like, okay, that wasn't a ringing endorsement, certainly, on his fielding prowess.
And defense fielding is not necessarily a Mariners' strength right now.
No, they're
charitable enough.
Yeah, there's some strange errors. I mean, Kyle Seegers, who is a great, I think, a great defensive third baseman, he makes the brilliant play, and then he'll commit the errors on the transfer. Like yesterday, you know, where he makes the play, and he's transferring the ball to his throwing hand, and he bobbles it, boom, error. Or just a little roller up the line and rolls up his glove, but he'll make the diving play and the bullet throw to first, and, you know, the play that where you're just going, whoa, amazing. And then the routine play, you're going, wow, that's the ball you booted, huh? Okay. So, yeah, and then you had the catcher's interference, which becomes an error for Tom Murphy. So, yeah, the errors have been there. It has not been their strength. But, you know, defensively on the infield, you know, Kyle Seager, I still have a ton of faith. And then J.P. Crawford and Evan White, we can talk about he's struggling at the plate. And maybe his bat is a minor league bat at this point. But that glove may be as good as any that's ever been at first base for this Mariner franchise. He is spectacular.
For this Mariner team, I certainly agree. I mean, you get he's reminding you of guys like Keith Hernandez and guys who are just tremendous, tremendous players, you know, defensively at first, and that's not been something that stood out for the Mariners. And you know, the Mariners, you know, if you and Dan Wilson, you know, I was the guy who used this kind of a comparison talking about it with Gallant last week. You know, the Mariners for not every year. Dan had some decent seasons behind the plate batting, but most of the time he did not, and most of the time he didn't care because what he brought defensively, and in his case, handling pitchers and things like that, was far more important than what he delivered on a batting average standpoint. Now, it remains to be seen if that can be true for a first baseman or not. But if it can, Evan White's the guy because defensively, I mean, he is already stellar. I mean, I can't imagine him getting much better than he is right now.
Yeah, and you hear pitchers talk about him, and you hear the other infielders talk about him, and the level of confidence they all have that I don't have to hit him in the chest with a throw. If I bounce it up there, short hop it, he's going to pick it. Unlike, you know, anybody they've had in recent memory, certainly somebody like Vogelbach or anybody like that, you know. So he or even when Marmolejos is there, he's just not going to make the plays that Evan White can make and make him look routine. He is fun to watch, and guys know that they don't have to be precise. If they can get the ball in the neighborhood, he's going to come up with it. And as a pitcher out there on the hill, that is huge because what it's going to do is he's going to make that play, record the out, rather than them, you know, with a pitch count skyrocketing because they didn't make the play. And then they end up having to throw more pitches. They're out of the game early. So it's just his impact defensively is big. Offensively, it feels like he's starting to fight. He was 1-for-4 yesterday. He's hitting .211. I'm not, you know, throwing a party, but it's better. It's creeping up. He seems like he's slowly starting to find it at the plate right now.
Yep. Let's hope he does. Let's hope he does.
Yeah, the other guy I'm hoping for in that case, Graz, is Taylor Trammell, and I don't know how often you've had a chance to hear him speak. We've talked a lot about him. We had him on the show. He's one of those guys you immediately just fall in love with. Couldn't be a nicer guy. Couldn't be more positive and just fun to talk to. You just absolutely root for this guy. Had a hit yesterday, which was good to see, 1-for-4, but he's batting .152. There's a lot of swing and miss in him right now. There's a lot of moments where he looks a bit overmatched at the plate to my eye. I am rooting for him as hard as I possibly can, but I'm almost wondering, is he a guy they could send down at some point? At what point do they say, okay, we just need more production, especially when Kyle Lewis comes back, whether that's tonight or tomorrow. You've got your center fielder. You know, just how are they feeling about his development with Trammell? Because I want him to succeed in the worst way, but right now it just feels like it's really, really few and far between when it comes to him producing at the plate.
No, I agree. I mean, look, I think he's the – I don't know who would be more likely to be sent down than him at this point. He does not look like he's ready to face major league pitching yet, but I emphasize the word yet because he's had a few good swings. He's at times has looked fairly good, but yeah, he you know, the plan I don't believe was for him to be up at this point. You know, it was because Kyle Lewis got hurt. So, you know, he can still have his moments. I think he still looks like a guy who can be a real player for them. But I agree with you, Bob. I think he's a little outmatched at this point.
Yeah, one more from this is from Scott Service, just talking about the hot start for Haniger and Ty France, and just saying, you know, hey, we're going to ride these guys as long as they're as hot.
Those guys are really swinging the bat well, you know, both Hanny and France. But Evan White's had good at bats. Nice to see Taylor Trammell get a knock today. JP continues, you know, getting on base, setting it up for those guys. So again, we're going to ride the Hanny France train and then Siegs at the top as long as we can. But guys know, you know, as we get comfortable and we get starting to settle in a little bit, you know, that lineup will start to get a little bit longer here too when Kyle Lewis joins us.
You got the Dare to Dream Express, and now you've got the Hanny France train, Graz. Plenty of rides available out there, I guess, is what we're finding out.
Yeah, that was a definite train to be on yesterday, man. They're both terrific yesterday.
Has it been different for you watching these guys? Do you have just a different sense of what kind of team you're watching in terms of I'm looking forward to it? Or are you just more along the cynical line of, yeah, let's talk in a month. Let's see who they are. I'm not going to get too worked up over this yet.
Well, no. Look, I don't think they're going to be very good by the time the year is over. So, I mean, if you want to call that cynical, okay. But I'm not waiting for it. I'm not anticipating and will be happy to see them not playing well. I think, like I said to you, Bob, the difference is this is a team that you're seeing the guys who are part of the future as opposed to guys that are just filling the uniforms. I mean, you know, you're seeing the guys who are going to eventually evolve into, you know, what they hope is a contending team. So I have a very different view in watching them. I've enjoyed watching them, but I'm also not paying much attention to wins and losses at this point. You know, we'll see what happens. Like we talked about beforehand. I mean, Kansas City's in first. The Yankees have the worst record in baseball. You know, there's only 16 games have been played, so there's a lot more baseball to be played. But you like a lot of the things you're seeing from the Mariners because, you know, and I looked up Haniger, by the way. He doesn't become a free agent until 2023. So he's definitely right in the middle of this thing, I think, in terms of being a part of what you got going forward. So I think everyone you see is part of what you're going to have when you're a contender. And I think that makes it different than watching it in the past and makes it more fun than watching it in the past.
All right, let's take two.
Take two.
Well, Alex Smith announced that he's retiring from the NFL. The number one overall pick in 2005 was named the Comeback Player of the Year last season after returning from that gruesome leg injury that he suffered in 2018.
This is a guy that I think...
Much respect.
Yeah, tons of respect for this guy. And I think he went through his career fairly underappreciated. I don't think he was ever, you know, an elite quarterback. He wasn't, you know, somebody you were throwing in that conversation with Rodgers and Manning and Brady and everybody and Drew Brees. But he was just a solid quarterback throughout his career. And it's interesting, Groz, that he's calling it a day. And I don't blame him. I wouldn't have blamed him if he never tried to come back. That leg injury was beyond gruesome and life-threatening at one point. But I saw today on one of the shows on NFL Network saying there were multiple teams that were interested in bringing him in, and that he decided it wasn't – he's not retiring because nobody wanted him. He just made the call right. That I'm good. I did what I needed to do, because he had a job in this league if he wanted it and elected not to. And in all respect to a guy who just kind of did his thing, was really consistent throughout his career, was solid, and him coming back from what he did was beyond remarkable.
Yeah, and I think coming back from it was enough. I mean, I agree with his decision. I think that, you know, there's no reason to then go out and keep playing on it and keep running the risk. He was, you know, controversial because he was the first player taken in the draft.
Yep.
And
year as Rodgers.
The 49ers did not take Aaron Rodgers, who was in their backyard, and he finally, you know, when he got to Kansas City, he had his success with Andy Reid, right? And you know, kind of showed that he could be a solid player. Had he not been hurt, he's a guy who probably would have had a much longer career.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about this? Just happened a few hours ago. UW Volleyball grabbed a berth in the NCAA Final Four, and the Huskies did it in dramatic fashion, rallied from two sets down to beat Pitt. It was their third straight match in the tournament. They went five sets. They'll play in the Final Four beginning on Thursday night.
Groz, I know you're a huge volleyball fan, so this has got to be massive for you, right? This is... You were just on the edge of your seat.
Bob, what are you talking about now? You've been a season ticket holder for the volleyball team for something like 8 years now, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we share that passion, you and I. Yeah. In all seriousness, good for them. That's, you know, to show that, get through, you know, five sets all, you know, throughout the tournament, going five sets like that and doing what they've done. Congrats to the UW volleyball team.
Absolutely, and good luck in the Final Four and beyond.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate is where you can get more info on that. All right, Alden Smith has already put the Seahawks in a tough situation. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob. The Groz filling in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Dave Wyman on vacation for 3 days this week. So we've got the Groz sitting in for Dave Wyman. Good to have Groz with us. You guys can text in throughout the show to 710-710. And coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some draft. Dan Shanka from Our Lad Scouting Services will join us at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. And Groz, I don't know if we should be surprised or not surprised at all, but Seahawks signed Alden Smith, which was really, really conflicting for me because I amongst all of his off-the-field shenanigans, I either didn't know or didn't remember that he had a domestic violence thing. Everything was, it seemed, alcohol-related. I just remember DUIs and all these, you know, the airport, mm-hmm. and I had somebody on Twitter point out that, you know, he had this domestic violence charge. I went back and read about it and was like, okay, now I don't feel good about this signing. Now you fast forward, they sign him, and then 2 days after he was signed, he's now in trouble. He's got a warrant out there. Allegedly, he's a battery charge from April 17th in St. Bernard Parish. Smith supposedly choked a victim unconscious inside of a coffee house is what we're reading. And I read another story. It said there's video of it somewhere. I haven't seen any video. But at this point, you know, everybody loves second chances. He's had second and third and fourth. And maybe he's just not a good guy. And maybe this
– well, let's,
he doesn't have slack. There is no slack with somebody who's had this sort of history.
No, it was – you know, from that standpoint, I'm not sure the Seahawks have got their They're either looking at that stuff differently than they used to because they had the same issue last year, although it was technically a different thing with Quentin Dunbar and this with Smith. And what's really disturbing about this is not something that happened 2 or 3 months ago. This is something that happened after the deal happened.
Yeah.
You know, and you're a member of the Seahawks, and so now you're moving on to a new team. And I understand that he informed them, the Seahawks, that is, that this happened. So they did have a little bit of advance notice on it, which is better than nothing, I suppose. But it's very, very unfortunate kind of a puzzling, decision by the Seahawks when you look at it now in retrospect to make this move. And we'll see. I mean, obviously, the jury's not in yet. But as you pointed out, when you got someone who's made mistake after mistake after mistake, you just don't have any slack. And Alden Smith has no slack.
Yeah, you lose the benefit of the doubt. You know, for those say, well, wait till let's see until the facts come out. Okay, I'm not saying he is or isn't guilty. The fact that he's involved on some level, that he is being sought by law enforcement, being in that position, maybe it was somebody that was standing next to him, a buddy of his, but just he doesn't have that luxury that anybody who's not been in trouble has of saying, well, hang on a minute, let's hear this guy out. He's never been in trouble and been a good guy, blah, blah, blah. That's all gone. He doesn't have that luxury anymore. It's unfortunate because maybe he'll be involved in something or he'll be rumored to be involved in something he didn't do. But that's the side effect to being in trouble and doing as many dopey things and bad things as you've done in your life with talking about Alden Smith. So, yeah, and you talk about a change with the Seahawks. I mean, listen, they released a pretty strongly worded statement after that whole Chad Wheeler incident. And this signing sort of flew in the face of that. In terms of what they would tolerate and what they would welcome into that locker room. And, to see that, they placed a level of trust into him, saying, hey, we believe in you enough to offer you a deal and take some of the PR hits we might take because we believe you're going to be an addition to this team and you've got yourself figured out. And then to have this happen 2 days later, 2 days.
Yeah. I mean, that's his response to it is that, and there's an arrest warrant out for him. So, it's out for him, not as a spectator of something, but as someone who is involved. So I'll be curious to see how the Seahawks handle it. They do like to give guys second chances, and we've seen them do that successfully in the past, and we've seen it not turn out as well in some cases. So I'll be curious to see how they react to this, especially as we point out, given the fact that this is not something that was in his past that was buried and even by a couple of months or a couple of weeks, but it was literally his reaction to signing with the Seahawks is to go out and get into a fight in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's disappointing, disturbing, whatever phrase you want to throw on there. I don't know. We'll see what happens. My hope is that they've got a zero tolerance policy where even if I don't know, it's not as bad as it sounds, but he did actually do something. But it's not as bad. Whatever it is, that they're just like, you know what. Hey, we gave you the opportunity. You already landed in the headlines for all of the wrong reasons. There's no real commitment here. There's no established relationship here. There's nothing to really consider in terms of the impact of his departure. So I would like to see them just go, hey, we took a shot for a moment. Didn't work out 2 days later, so we're going to move on. That's my hope.
I agree.
That's my hope. And to me, he was a luxury item. I mean, if we're talking about what the product is on the field, you signed Hyder from the 49ers. You bring back Carlos Dunlap. You're hoping Daryl Taylor can be something. We have no idea, but you brought back Benson Mayoa. You addressed that spot. To me, he was icing on the cake. He wasn't necessary, but the idea of that addition was really exciting and intriguing. But I don't look at him and go, okay, if he's not there now, what do they do? I don't have that feeling about it.
Well, even if you have that feeling about it, that doesn't justify making a decision on whether or not you're going to keep him. So, I don't know how important that is in the long haul, though we know that obviously guys who get second and third chances are usually guys that can play fairly well. That's just the way it goes. So, I think a luxury item to an extent, but, trying to kind of get that defensive line rotation going with a bunch of fresh legs out there, he was going to be a big part of that. So, it's too bad. It's too bad. And again, I look at the timing of it. The fact that this is how he reacts to it is putting himself in a situation where something like this could happen even. in New Orleans just as a problem.
It had a feeling, or it was reminiscent of when they signed Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril. It felt like, okay, they're bringing in Hyder, and they get him at a really reasonable deal. Now they're bringing in Alden Smith on a one-year deal, and it just felt like two guys that, you know, with Avril and Bennett, they weren't the prize of free agency. They weren't the two guys that everybody was going after, and the Seahawks got them both at a really reasonable price. And then you saw the impact that they had. And I was looking at this sort of in that same light, like, man, that could maybe this is 2.0. Maybe not as good. Who knows? But just the idea that they got both these guys in NFL dollars at really, especially in the case of Alden Smith, it's, you know, a one-year minimum deal. Potentially it was going to be a massive return on a very small investment with these two. And now it feels like, all right, well, it's not 2.0, and they gave it a shot. But that's sort of how I was viewing this when they signed him initially.
Well, I'll be curious to see what they do. I mean, if they'll, like I said, they had a little advanced notification of it, so they didn't. Their immediate response wasn't to cut ties with them. We'll have to see what they know and what we don't know, I guess.
Yeah. We'll see. So that's unfortunate news that came out today. That's breaking today, and as details become available, we will certainly pass those along to you. A reminder: if you don't have the 710 Sports app, you should download it because A, it's free. That's the best price. B, you can take us with you. It's beautiful weather, a lot of people outside. You can take us with you. You won't miss a thing. Or you can listen to the podcast. You can text in. You can watch the video. Everything's available for you. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. So check out the phone app if you haven't already downloaded that. All right, our road to the NFL draft begins. We're going to start the run-up to draft day next. It's Wyman and Bob with the Graz in on 710 ESPN Seattle.
No first-round pick? No problem.
This is the guy we drafted. We drafted him to do exactly what you saw him doing.
It's time to decipher the draft gems with Wyman and Bob.
We're going to do this every day at 2:45 when we're not preempted by the Mariners. We're going to take a look at the draft, get into more detail as the days go on. But today, more of an overview. We've got Graz in for Dave Wyman. We'll have Dan Shonka from Our Lad Scouting Services joining us at the top of the hour. But, Graz, this is unlike any other season we've been involved with the Seahawks in the Pete Carroll era, and that is a team going into the draft with just three picks. Now, it would be the safest bet in the history of bets that they end up with more than three picks. The idea that they're going to stick with the 2, a 4, and a 7, not trade down, not accumulate more picks in a John Schneider-run draft room makes no sense to me. But we've often seen the Seahawks often will make moves that we feel like, well, that didn't make a ton of sense. We didn't see that coming. But what do you think the odds are that they just stick with three picks?
They're probably long. I mean, they probably won't. Although, you know, you could make an argument that if there was ever a year to treat the draft a little bit differently in your approach, and I'm not sure what you know but specifically what I'm talking about there. I mean, necessarily, but if you know you saw a weird season where some teams played a lot of games, some teams hardly played any games. A bunch of players did not play at all, that you're trying to just judge them on workouts. I think that they'll get their share of picks like they usually do, but this would be, if there was ever going to be a year where they didn't do it, if there's ever going to be a year where, wow, they really went against form, I wonder why, it would be this year, and it would be because of the fact that you really didn't have one element. And I'll be interested in hearing Dan Shonka talk about this a little bit for guys at Our Lads who try and figure out draft values for different players. What it's like when you've got, you know, some guys who played 12 games and some guys who played 2 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this would be the year. I agree with that, but I just don't know. I see John. I feel him being uncomfortable. Like, okay, how do we get more bites at the apple here? How do we increase our volume? We're going to trade number 2. We'll trade down. I don't know if they trade down further into the second or into the third and pick up a couple picks there, or trade away that 4th and, you know, for some picks this year, maybe something next year. I just, the idea that they would just go, yep, well, we'll take our second round pick. We're going to leave it where it is. And same with the 4th, same with the 7th. I don't see it. I think they've got needs. I think they've covered a lot in free agency, but the cornerback depth for one is one that I'm not comfortable with at all. I'm not sure how you feel about the cornerbacks at this point, but I think they could address that. I don't know that they've got their center. Certainly they didn't commit to Ethan Posick like he's their center of the future. He signs a 1-year deal. So, I think they could go center. I think they could go potentially wide receiver, which is much less of a priority to me for that third receiver spot. But looking at that cornerback spot, I think they could use help there. And maybe they're looking at some linemen for, you know, future spots. I mean, Dwayne Brown is a guy that's, you know, he's certainly not ascending anymore. He's coming toward the end of his career. I don't know that you have his replacement on your roster, so maybe they look at somebody for that spot as well. But what is there a position group or a spot you look at and say, okay, this absolutely needs to be addressed?
In the draft, I mean, it's a two-part question, really, that you're asking. You know, the spots that you mentioned need to be addressed. I mean, they do need depth at cornerback. They do need, even though I agree with you that it's not necessarily a priority, they do need a little bit of more depth at the wide receiver position. You're right about Brown, and there are questions about the offensive line, as we well know, in general. I mean, does this Alden Smith situation mean that he's not coming and they feel like they have a need on defensive line? But how they resolve it, of course, is the big question. And again, if it's not the draft, if this is the year that it's not the draft, I mean, is this a year, for example, just throwing it out there? And they've always had success with undrafted free agents, and we've mentioned them in the past. Some of them have gone on to be big players here, and that's something that they've done well. But is that a bigger factor in general this year because of that lack of knowledge of specific guys? So I just am very curious as to how they rate the draft and look at the draft versus previous years, Look, they're going to trade out of that second-round pick. You're right. They're going to trade down and get more picks, and they're going to do that no matter what. But it doesn't change the fact that this might be a situation where Schneider and his guys have gotten together and said, you know what, we're going to be able to get everything we want, everything that we need to get because of the scouting that we've done with guys who are undrafted free agents. I mean, not everything, but a lot of what we're looking for. So we don't have the same sort of pressure we felt in the past to get a lot of draft picks. We'll see. It's they've never, and obviously, Bob, I mean, they've never gone into a draft with just three picks before.
Yeah.
At this late stage. So, I mean, this is already uncharted territory in terms of trying to monitor how the Seahawks play the draft, because they're already in a situation that we've not seen them in.
You know, what's funny is you said they will trade that second round pick. We know that's what they're going to do. The fact that you said it with such certainty means they're going to keep that pick and make a pick there, because that's what they do to us every year, right?
Yeah. Take a quarterback or a running back or something. You know, they just makes you, what are they doing?
Yeah, the 253 just sent in a text. Sounds like two safeties and a kicker to me. you feel completely set at safety. You feel great about that. You certainly don't need a kicker. You feel good about all these other, like last year we felt like linebacker is not a spot they need to address. You feel very deep there. You got KJ, you had Bobby, you had Cody Barton, Ben Burkervin, Shaquem Griffin. You felt like you had depth, and you had your starters, and then they spend their first round pick on Jordan Brooks, who looks like he's going to be a very good player. It was just at the moment you're going, wait, a linebacker? That was your first round pick.
Well, okay. I think that the other thing that, I mean, you know, as opposed to being a Jets fan or something like that, you know, you've got a tremendous amount of confidence that the front office has got a plan and a plan of how to get the best, you know, 40 plus player, however you get the number of players you need on the roster is going to be this year. I mean, they know what they're doing. I mean, you've had success after success after success here in Seattle, years and years without a losing season. So you can go into it with a little more confidence than some other people can who are fans of other organizations who have shown consistently they don't know what they're doing.
It just reminds me, Gross, you and I at the Hawk's Nest doing an appearance for the Seahawks draft, and we had people coming up, what do you think they're going to do? What do you think they're going to do? And we both said with absolute certainty, well, we can tell you what they're not going to do is they're not going to take a running back with their first overall pick, which was in the second round. And lo and behold, first pick for the Seahawks in the second round that year, Kristen Michael.
Should they have taken him, Bob?
No, they shouldn't have.
No, they shouldn't have.
It turned out really poorly. But it was just an absolute for us. Like, well, you never know with the Hawks. Who knows what they'll – but we know what they won't do is take a running back. They take a freaking running back.
And do you agree with me in terms of this, you can have confidence in them because of what they've done in the past?
Yeah, yeah, in certain aspects.
It's not as worrisome as it would be if you're a fan of another team who has seen guys flounder around, make mistakes with talent and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, this is an organization that knows what it's doing, in my opinion, and that's been proven year after year after year on the field.
Yeah, I think they, like any team, they've had their swings and misses. Obviously, Kristen Michael was a swing and a miss. Malik McDowell was a swing and a miss. We could go down the list to, you know, James Carpenter and people like that just did not really work out in terms of a first-round pick for this team.
Right, but if we go down the list of all the guys they've drafted since those guys have been here, it's going to be a lot more on the plus side than the negative side. I mean, you're right. Everyone has their misses, but these guys have been very, very good at building a team through the draft and through free agency, through undrafted free agents, as well as some other ways too. Occasionally, a guy here and there from a trade or something like that. But you know, they've got a very good idea of what they're doing. They've been doing it for a decade and doing it as well as anyone in the NFL has been doing it.
Yeah, and this year is going to be wildly interesting, not just what they're doing, what's going to happen at the top of the draft. Are the 49ers going to take this quarter? Justin Fields, Mac Jones, who they're going to take? We'll talk about all that. Dan Shanka from Our Lad Scouting Services is going to join us next. It's Wyman and Bob with the Graz in on 710 ESPN Seattle.